From the land of Grand Hugh University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 16th day of February, 2023. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett at agmarket.net. Aaron Hager, Extension weed scientist from the U of I, will be here to discuss a just-released update to dicamba use on soybean. It will not go down well with farmers across Illinois and the Midwest. We'll also hear from Nick Paulson and Gary Schnitke today about crop budgets in the 2023 growing season, as well as the weather forecast with Mike Tenura at T-Storm Weather, all on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
March corn settled at $6.76 today, down a quarter of a cent. The May up one at $6.75. In December, new crop at $5.93.5, a penny and three quarters lower a bushel. March soybeans at $15.26.5, three quarters higher. The May up one and three quarters. November, 8.75 higher, settled at $13.83.75 there. Bean meal futures 30 cents higher on the day. The bean oil up 66 cents. Wheat futures soft red down 4.25 at $7.65. And the hard red at $8.98.5, up 4 cents for the afternoon. Live cattle futures at $164.75, 52.5 cents higher, rather lower for the day. The feeders off $1.10 for 100 pounds at $186.22.5, and lean hogs at $85.77.5, down 72.5 cents. Crude oil, 6 cents lower a barrel. Gasoline at $2.64.8 per gallon, 4.6 cents lower. Matt Bennett, agmarket.net, now joins us to take a look at what's happened in Chicago. Hi, Matt. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
What were the mainstays of today's trade?
You know, in all honesty, it's kind of a boring day of trade. I mean, yesterday you kind of gave back some gains that we've seen of late. Over the last couple of days, kind of pushed up on some areas. For instance, with corn, we keep getting stopped out at 688.25, 688.5 on the March. It just doesn't seem like it wants to get up and above that. You lose a little bit of buying interest, you know, and all of a sudden you're back down here 13 cents off where you were a couple sessions ago. And so, you know, corn essentially pretty dead here today. And then as far as beans go, I mean, they traded both sides. Both of them traded both sides. But soybeans, you know, especially in the deferred months, they actually settled up 8 or 9 cents. And so, yeah, a little more excitement there. But as far as nearby goes, I mean, March beans, I mean, you got to check them for a pulse too. I mean, up 0.75 cents. I didn't see a settle yet, but as you and I were talking, you know, that's what the close was.
Yeah, so December corn in that 590 range earlier today, and we'll hear this just a bit on the Closing Market Report from both Nick Paulson and Gary Schnitke, that they have decided that farmers really need to consider pushing even more than usual this year to make sales. I know that you've been in that camp. If they have not made sales, what do you suggest for them to do?
At the very least, I'd like to put a floor under some of these. I'd kind of like to split it up, spread my risk out. I guess I would prefer to put a floor under bushels again at the very least, but you could always HTA some corn or soybeans, either one of them, turn around and buy yourself a call if you're still friendly. But most people I've worked with feel pretty confident that they're going to be able to turn a pretty decent profit, at least on a portion of those bushels. So kind of like to protect a fair amount of the bushels that I would say are going to be uninsured. And so if you kind of know where your insurance level is going to be and you've got uninsured bushels, then I think you need to step in there at some of these elevated price levels, especially considering what kind of profit margins we're looking at that are on the table currently.
Is there any indication that the end of February will turn to one direction or the other sharply, or will it maintain this trading range?
Well, you know, it just depends on a couple of different things. Of course, you got weather in South America, definitely running a little bit behind on getting this safrinha crop in the ground. It's not anything extraordinary, but the bottom line is it's not going in the ground as quickly as what they'd like to see, or as quickly as what it, for instance, went in the ground last year. We all know last year the timing of the planting of that crop certainly had a lot to do with the fact that they had a big safrinha crop. Anytime you get this safrinha crop in the ground late, you're very susceptible to late season dryness whenever the dry season sets in. The other thing, of course, that you got to pay close attention to, as we move forward, you got a lot of acreage estimates, of course, that's going to play in. But the biggest thing for me is corn exports. Sales were pretty good, 1 million tons here this week. We've got to see sales and shipments pick up. We really need to see a huge uptick as bean shipments start to fade away from the U.S. and go towards more Brazil. We really need to see this corn business pick up substantially, because if we don't, we definitely could be looking at another cut whenever it comes to USDA time. And so not only are you going to see our old crop carry out maybe boosted just a little bit, but you've got to carry that over into the new crop balance sheet and the assumption that your demand's not going to grow much from where it currently is because prices are still high.
Do the folks in the commercial section see that basis is remaining strong for corn? Is there an idea that the export market should be good or not?
Yeah, I do think that your easiest time to buy corn this year, probably for those folks, is probably now through maybe planting time, up to planting time. I think once you get out past that, you get into your April, May time frame. Some of the folks that have booked a lot of corn, for instance, last fall, for instance, to head west, I think some of that's going to start to dry up, and then you're going to have to see what the situation is. What kind of crops South America have, what kind of acreage we see here in the U.S., because it can certainly define a lot of the direction of the market. But I don't really see basis firming substantially from here, at least not for a few more weeks, because I think that there's a fair amount of needs that are already being met.
What's the trade thinking about the Ukraine-Russia issue and the spring drive there for the war?
The interesting thing is that it just seems like folks have maybe gotten a little immune to it, a little deadened to it. But the bottom line is they're going to have a hard time getting near the acreage in the ground that they would like to see. First of all, it's hard to get a hold of fuel. If you can get a hold of it, it's extremely expensive. And so most of the folks that we're talking to are saying that you're going to see acreage as far as corns goes, for instance, should be down a fair amount. They're going to plant the things that they use in their country and not worry about exports so much just due to the nature of the situation their country's in.
This could cause an issue for wheat exports out of that part of the world through the Black Sea, mostly to the Middle East.
Oh, absolutely. There's no doubt that you could see a wheat export situation, not only from Ukraine, but from Russia. And so, Russia obviously exports a ton of wheat, but it's not real fashionable in the world sector to do a whole lot of business with Russia. So, especially as you see bombs flying. So it's going to be very interesting to kind of see how this plays out moving forward, but you definitely have to keep an eye on it because you can certainly see some major swings in the markets moving forward. I think that you're going to have to get more of a sustained impact of what's going on over there, because one day of bombs flying, it definitely kind of gets the market fired up, but it seems like it goes away pretty quickly thereafter.
Thank you much.
Absolutely. Thank you.
That's Matt Bennett. He is with AgMarket.net. Joined us on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report, and should join us at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana on the 7th day of March for the All Day Ag Outlook. You can too. Registration is just $30 at willag.org or farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Just one news item for the day. Over the noon hour central time today, U.S. EPA issued new restrictions for the use of dicamba on soybean. University of Illinois Extension weed scientist Aaron Hager says there are two new items farmers in Illinois will have to abide by this season.
The EPA has issued letters to three registrants of dicamba products used in soybean, those, of course, being Bayer Crop Science, Syngenta Crop Protection, and BASF. And in the letter, they indicate that they have accepted the registrant's proposed changes to these labels. And two particular changes that will affect dicamba use in Illinois soybean for 2023. Number one, the application deadline is now June 12th. So it's no longer June 20th as it has been in previous years. The other difference, or the other significant change that will affect dicamba use in Illinois soybean, in addition to that being moved from June 20th to June 12th, applications are restricted to soybean before the V4 growth stage. So essentially, there's two new restrictions or two new changes for Illinois use. Do not apply after June 12th, or do not apply after the V4 growth stage, whichever comes first.
Hager says the new restrictions will cause issues this growing season and offer some advice producers need to consider today.
The timing of this is again, very challenging for farmers, soybean farmers who have already made their seed and their herbicide purchase decisions. I mean, we're within, 45, 50 days of beginning to plant soybean, and now we learn it literally at the 11th hour that these new restrictions have come in place. So it would be, very good advice, I think, for individuals who have purchased dicamba soybean seed technology, if they have the opportunity to use a variety that's also resistant to a glufosinate, like a Liberty or an Interline sort of product, they may want to check with their input suppliers just to be sure that there could be an adequate supply of an alternative post-emergence herbicide. Say, for example, if we get into a late planting cycle here in 2023, and they simply cannot make that deadline or that growth stage either one. So it's always good to have now. It's really good to have a alternative backup plan. Check now with your supplier to make sure that their inventories can cover your needs if you need to, if you do indeed need to make a change because of these new restrictions.
Erin Hager is a weed scientist with Illinois Extension located on campus in Urbana-Champaign. EPA issued the new dicamba use on soybean guidance this afternoon. Today, I hosted a risk management webinar for the FarmDoc team. It was part one of a two-part series, and you can see it now at the FarmDoc Daily website. Look in the archives. You'll find a YouTube video of this morning's part one of the webinar with Nick Paulson and Gary Schnittke, both agricultural economists here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. They covered crop budgets for the 2023 growing season for corn and soybeans, talked a bit about wheat as well, discussed the ARC and PLC decisions that farmers will be making, as well as the crop insurance decisions. They'll come back in part two to go through those crop insurance decisions. It's not until March the 2nd. You can sign up for part two online now at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. And along the way this morning in part one, they also talked about marketing this year's corn and soybean crop. As you know, Gary Schnittke has been a proponent of marketing enough to cover your expenses for the 2023 growing season. And now he's going just a bit further. Nick Paulson picks up that note from this morning's webinar.
Maybe where Gary and I are at, we're not the Outlook folks. We're not Scott Irwin or Joe Jansen. But I guess where we would be at on marketing is probably in the 40% or the 39%. So this table was put together based on some farmer survey data back in 2018, so it doesn't necessarily represent things consistently over time, but draw your attention to the average percent hedged at different points in the crop year. So if we look at, as of start of the year, we'd usually expect about 10% of the crop that's going to go in the ground in March to be hedged. 22% by April 1st, 41% by July 1st. I think from a risk management standpoint, not from a price projection standpoint, but we would probably err on the side of maybe marketing a little bit more aggressively in a year like this. I think giving up that upside potential you might be optimistic about is could be advised in a year like this. Simply because right now you may be in a position to be able to lock in a positive margin. May not look as good as it did the last 2 years, but definitely better than it could look given some of the downside price risks that I think are still out there in the marketplace. Gary, you'd
yeah, no, absolutely. And here, this is not a price projection, by the way. So, but you can think about this: if we have a good crop, and Brazil has a good crop, we could be heading back to lower prices again, and this is one way to protect yourself. The scenario that doesn't work is obviously the drought scenario. If we have a drought, we will see that 590 price be 8 or 9. I mean, we're in so that
potentially, yeah,
yeah,
definitely.
8 or 9. So, and that's why I take that RP with the harvest price. And particularly if you're going to up that average percent per hedged, up that.
Yeah, and you know, we're going to talk a little bit about crop insurance, but you know, again, given the environment we're in, and again, it may seem like disappointing returns you can lock in at this point now relative to the last 2 years, but I think again, from a risk management standpoint, it's never necessarily a mistake to you know, still keep that crop insurance coverage high. Again, that might be an attractive area. It might be tempting to look at alternatives there, lowering coverage, swapping out for county instead of individual coverage to lower that premium cost. But again, I think, you know, you always got to kind of think about the downside or the worst case scenarios in production ag, and instead of trying to, you know, hit those home runs.
That was just a small snippet of part one of the risk management webinar that Nick Paulson and Gary Schnittke have been doing for the FarmDoc team. It took place earlier today. Part two will deal in depth with the risk management decisions related to crop insurance. It comes up on the second day of March in the morning at 9 a.m. I'll be there and I'll remind you along the way, but you can go visit the FarmDoc Daily website right now to sign up for that particular event, to listen to it live or watch it on that webinar live. And of course, you can find the archive of this morning's webinar at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Look under webinars and in the archives section. Now, Nick Paulson and Gary Schnittke will both join us at the Ald Ag Outlook as well, and they'll go through some of the same things, but more depth, and you can ask questions directly of them there if you join us at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana on Tuesday, the 7th day of March. Not only will Nick and Gary be there, but so will Bruce Sherrick to talk about farmland, Scott Irwin to talk about renewable diesel, and Joe Jansen will take up the price outlook. The whole AgEcon team will be there, including Jonathan Kappas, who will manage that farm bill policy outlook. It's all on the 7th day of March. That's a Tuesday at the Beef House. You can join us for $30. The ag analyst that you hear on the air here will be there too, including one from John Deere to talk about automation, artificial intelligence, and John Deere vision. Sign up at willag.org or farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Let's check the weather forecast now with Mike Tenura. He's at T-Storm Weather. That's tstorm.net online. Hi, Mike. Thanks for being with us.
Hey, Todd. Thanks for having me.
The weather forecast for Argentina looks like what for the next week and a half?
Well, it's going to be a lot cooler than it has been over the next 5 days. High temperatures were in the 100s for much of the last week, which is unusually warm for the middle of February. But it's only going to be in the 70s through Monday, so it will be quite a bit cooler going forward. It does turn warmer once we get into next week with 80s and 90s returning. But the bigger part of the story is that there's not much rain in the forecast over the next 7 to 10 days. We saw some areas of significant totals this week, but all that rain is now ending. And that will leave us in a situation where we still need more rain at the end of the month. We should see some showers and storms starting up in about 7 to 10 days. That will happen with that warmer air mass, but it doesn't look like heavy rain is on the way. So we're still going to be in this situation where we're in one of our driest growing seasons on record, though the last 2 to 3 months haven't been as anomalously dry as when you start back in the last year. We started in May and then go through to now. It's been the driest on record over the last 38 years. But if you look at it over the last several weeks to several months, we're around number 5 to number 8 driest.
Given all of that, what do you see in the southern parts of Brazil?
Well, we're going to see some rains coming up over the next few days, but the important thing about these rains is that most of them are going to focus to the immediate north and west of Rio Grande do Sul. Rio Grande do Sul has been hit by a drought over the last several months, and even though there will be some storms here through tomorrow, it doesn't look like heavy rain is on the way. So that story is not going to change very much. They planted their soybeans, or at least got through halfway planting, in early November, so they could still benefit from rain, but eventually time is going to run out and the story is going to end. But the heavy totals coming up for Paraguay and Paraná to the immediate north might slow down harvesting that is now beginning, and we'll have to keep an eye on that and see how it pans out.
In the center west and northern Brazil, is there anything of note?
Well, it's been drying there, and that's been helping out with soybean harvesting and corn planting in Goiás and Mato Grosso. The only concern we have is that as you move further north into those fringe areas of Matopiba, which is a four-state region in northern Brazil, and that does include about 10% of soybean production, that area has been rapidly drying over the last several weeks. There will be some rains coming up over the next 10 days, but it doesn't look like heavy rain that would fully eradicate the dryness that's developed. Now, most of this dryness is affecting the later planted crops in that region, so it's not like we're right in the heart of the season and we're getting dry weather, but it has been at the tail end. And so that's something to keep in mind, but we'll just have to wait and see if we start to get any reports of it being a little dry there.
Here in the United States, at least in our part of the world, the Midwest, things are changing just a bit. Some cooler weather coming in. What can we expect?
Well, we have this rain and snow system that's moving through today, but that will be out of here by tomorrow. Then we're going to turn a lot warmer in most areas for the weekend and into early next week. The thing that gets a little interesting is that once we get into Monday and Tuesday, we'll see a very cold air mass settle in across Canada and then into the Dakotas. That will create a very sharp temperature gradient across the central U.S., and that's a recipe for rains and snows in a wide area. In fact, we could see multiple snows across the northern half, especially from Interstate 80 on to the north going forward, and that would create a very snowy end to the month of February. We'll see how all of that pans out, but regardless of what happens there, it looks to stay pretty stormy in the eastern Corn Belt and the Mid-South, and that will turn soft red winter wheat areas pretty wet once we get into March.
Hey, thank you much.
Yep, great being here, Todd.
Mike Tenares with T-Storm Weather at tstorm.net online. You know, the Beef House event is less than 3 weeks away now, and I hope that we'll see you there. This is a great event. It started in 1991. Charlie Lindy was the director of farm programming here at Illinois Public Media at the time. I was a farm reporter working with Charlie, and the two of us, along with the analyst, decided that we should be able to put on an all-day event that would encompass a lot of the production, agriculture, and marketing decisions that producers could make. It has been a stellar event, as best I can tell, for the entire run. And I'm so happy that it has continued, and I'm hopeful that you, yes, you, will be able to join us Tuesday, the 7th day of March, at the Beef House. The cost remains low at $30, including your meal and that Beef House roll and coffee in the morning. And we've got a great event scheduled for you this year, along with all of the analysts that you hear on WILL and the Closing Market Report and the Opening Market Report. John Deere's Mark Cheney to talk about automation, artificial intelligence, and John Deere Vision. Bob Ray will be there with the Illinois FBFM. And we'll kick off the day with Eric Snodgrass from Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible discussing the coming growing season. It doesn't get really much better than this. And for $30, you can't come close to it anyplace else. So join us at the Beef House on Tuesday, the 7th day of March. Register now. Don't wait. WillAg.org, farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Of course, you've been listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media.